Welcome to Think Again, a podcast by Macquarie Asset Management, providing financial advisors with a fresh perspective and innovative insights designed to keep you and your clients a step ahead.
Welcome to the show. I'm Denise St. Ivany. Joining me today is Ruth Goodstein, Chief Operating Officer of Wealth Solutions at Macquarie Asset Management. Our topic today is the outlook for alternative investments, and there's no better person with whom to discuss evolution in this space than Ruth, who's got a deep expertise in alternatives across 25 years that she spent in this industry. Ruth joined Macquarie last year through its acquisition of Central Park Group, which is an independent investment advisory firm specializing in institutional quality alternative investment strategies for high net worth investors. Ruth brings experience in product development, marketing, and senior legal roles. She's a graduate of Cornell and Brooklyn Law and has served in senior roles in investment firms that include Robeco Sage Capital, UBS, JP Morgan Investment Management, and Oppenheimer. Ruth, thanks so much for coming on today.
Thanks so much, Denise, and I greatly appreciate the opportunity to talk about a topic that we are passionate about.
Yeah, passion comes across in these conversations, and so I know that you'll bring that to this conversation today, so thanks. So prior to last year, you'd spent 16 years at Central Park Group, and during that time, you helped provide clients access to private equity, hedge funds, real estate, and fund-of-funds managers. You've seen a lot of change in that time, like the increased interest in alternatives among individual investors, and also the structural changes that were needed to make alts more accessible. So I'd love to start there and think about why now is a great time for investors to be thinking beyond the traditional 60-40 portfolio.
I think this is, you know, the $64 question. And I was thinking about, you know, if you've had an EKG lately and you think about volatility in the market, you can think about 2022 as an amazingly difficult year for investors, many of whom would like to forget 2022. But even as we approach 2023, we've got a hangover, geopolitical issues, global inflation, supply chain, public markets have been pummeled. U.S. IPOs in 2022 were at an all-time low. So the 60-40 allocation has been challenged, if not broken, if you read enough from the pundits. And so, you know, when we speak about being in the first quarter of 2023, these challenges remain. You know, will we tame inflation? Will we head into a recession? But for seasoned investors, there's room for optimism, and we need to be optimistic. You mentioned I've been doing this for a while, and I hope we've reached finally a tipping point for the adoption by high net worth investors of alternatives. The amazing thing is, I think for the first time, the mainstreaming and democratization of high quality alternatives is happening in earnest. And I think, you know, living through the pandemic has taught us the value of being resilient as humans. I think we need to build our portfolios to be resilient as well. Simply put, there is no alternative to the compelling investment opportunities that high quality alternatives offer to complement portfolio allocations. So diversifying portfolios with private equity, private credit, hedge funds, real assets, and other alternatives present opportunities to seek to preserve capital, to seek to reduce correlations, to lower volatility, potentially mitigate risk, and help achieve portfolio objectives. Ultimately, the goal should be to help deliver attractive returns, attractive risk-adjusted returns, given any macro environment. So it's been important to point out that alternative investments aren't this year's fad. We've been working in this area for 25 plus years, trying to deliver great alternatives to the millionaire next door. Institutions and endowments have been doing this type of investing in alternatives for years. We preach that alternatives aren't alternatives anymore. And we've seen the interest grow exponentially. So I hope that gives you some flavor, but just Denise, to give you a little context, in 2015, there were $7.3 trillion in alternative assets. By 2021, that number doubled. And by 2027, expect to see $23 trillion in alternative assets. So investors need to access this asset class that can produce differentiated returns and different returns than the public markets can offer in order to complement and enhance their portfolios and make sure their EKGs look a little bit less shocking, if you will.
Well, you captured a lot of sentiments that I've heard from investors and advisors, you know, throughout this past year, and that need to explore this space. So if you are exploring this space and you're trying to diversify in alts for the first time, what is a key starting point? You know, when they're answering the question of how to access, you know, you got to also think about what are these key investment considerations that investors, retail investors need to make.
Thank you. Thanks for asking that, because I think, as always, we have to start with the fundamentals. Investing is hard work. Investing in alternatives is not a silver bullet. You have to do the work. There is no substitute to understanding the risks as well as the benefits. Investing in alternatives is not for everyone. There are investor qualifications, but you know, investing in alternatives means that there are no magic solutions here. Returns will differ radically depending on manager selection. So due diligence is key. Be mindful of your liquidity needs if you were investing in long-dated assets. Understand your risk tolerance, your investment horizon, the tax issues and tax reporting. Ultimately, the key is education. And fundamentally, there's an abundance of resources that can make us smarter and better informed as we think about the asset class.
That's great advice for people. And I know you started off in some of the earlier comments talking about how alternatives aren't necessarily alternatives anymore. We've used it as a word for such a long period of time. But now we seem to just use it as a catch-all phrase to capture this large, diverse category. Can you touch on a few innovative ways that individual investors are now beginning to access these, quote, alternatives?
Sure. I think that the sort of first way folks accessed alternatives were through feeder funds and access funds. These were funds directly into an institutional fund. And those are really limited to folks with $5 million in investable assets. Typically, they have minimums of $250,000. So there's a high barrier to entry. And there are fewer people who have that type of investor qualification than if you go sort of down to sort of registered funds. And those funds may have a $2.1 million investor qualification, or even an accredited investor, $1 million qualification. And the bite sizes become smaller too. So instead of $250,000, we're talking perhaps a $25,000 to $50,000 minimum. And then there are other investment opportunities through things like BDCs, business development companies, and REITs, real estate investment trusts. And most recently, there have been sort of operating companies that have been formed in what we call a conglomerate structure, whereby you can get the benefit of perhaps investing in infrastructure or private equity through an operating vehicle rather than an investment company. So, you know, the innovation will continue. And the push to sort of make these funds and these opportunities accessible is truly on.
Yeah, there's been a lot of structural changes. Do you want to add any more about specific structural changes that have made alts more accessible to high net worths, or did we?
I want to geek out a little, and if this is boring, then forgive me, but I am a geek, but at heart. And so there's been a number of changes in the way in this wave of democratization. When I first started in the business, you could only have 100 investors in a fund. And we were constantly trying to figure out how do we get more than 100 investors. And then The SEC and its wisdom came out with 3C7, a qualified purchaser fund, and we were able to put 500 investors in a fund. And then lo and behold, that limitation became 2,000 investors. So I've seen just sort of the ability to have more people access. And then the rules changed a little bit with respect to taxation, and we were able to create these vehicles with 1099s because, frankly, people didn't like getting K-1s. And so we had changes in tax regulation that helped make these more accessible for humans rather than just these institutions and endowments. And then thirdly, there are a number of funds that became registered under the 1933 Act so that they were publicly available. And the trick there was now you can advertise, now you can talk about it. And it wasn't just this private thing that one only found out about because you're on the 19th hole of your golf course.
Right. So there's been tremendous evolution, like you say, democratization, so that it is more accessible to more people. That's wonderful. Choice is good for investors. Well, what are some factors or risks that advisors and investors both should bear in mind when considering allocating to alts?
I think this is really important. And I think, again, this is, goes into why we need to make sure people have a level-headed expectation of what they're getting into. First off, is there's complexity in terms of reporting. Depending on the structure and the asset class, valuations may only happen quarterly. Statements may not reflect current NAVs. K-1s can be delayed. And may cause your client to go on extension. Paperwork can be super annoying, and liquidity and some of the other items I listed above in terms of the risks really need to be considered.
And definitely, you know, to, like you said, sort through quality, having somebody that has expertise in this area to help guide those choices really make a difference. I know you and the other members of Wealth Solutions have been leaders in this space for a long time, this movement to help make alternatives, including private equity assets, available to individuals. What have you learned about the challenges that advisors face in helping clients actually navigate the space and become an investor here?
I know that it's not easy to be an advisor. I've learned that, and I agree with you so much, Denise, that the diligence in selecting the right managers is so key in terms of performance. But what I think I sort of focus on is that there's really no such thing as a free lunch. And depending on the structure, a client may have to deal with capital calls, which can really come at inconvenient times, like right before Christmas, they tend to come sometimes. And there may be a J curve, which is inherent in the product, but could look to a client's statement that they're losing money when in fact this should have been explained upfront and anticipated. And part of the natural cycle of a private equity investment, that there may be no or limited liquidity. So the most important thing I think a provider can do is level set expectations and over-educate. The most gratifying piece of the puzzle is when the client and the advisor is educated and appreciate where the investment fits, how it dampened volatility, or was the performing asset in the portfolio, and we get thank yous, and we get repeat business, and nothing feels better than that.
Oh, I bet. To know that you're making a difference in somebody's portfolio is, I'm sure, extremely gratifying. So we're coming up on time, but you know, I'm thinking about the conversation we've had, you know, sort of from the beginning parts of the conversation to where we just ended up. You've mentioned education being a key factor a couple of times, that there's a lot of resources, but it's important as we navigate the space. Are there any specific areas where you see greatest need for education, and you know, any recommendations you have for this education area?
I think we should focus a bit on implementation. How do we effectively use these assets as tools? How do we think about them over the long term, over the course of an investor's life? How do we educate in a compelling but simple way? I'm fond of saying that it isn't rocket science, but I think we really have to work to demystify the asset class so that we unlock the potential benefits for the greatest number of investors.
Good advice. Well, very helpful to have your perspectives today, Ruth. Thanks so much for coming on, and thanks everyone for listening. Do check out the show notes for more information, and be sure to subscribe to Think Again wherever you get your podcast.
Thanks for listening. Check out the show notes for more information on topics from this episode, and be sure to subscribe to Think Again wherever you get your podcasts. This recording is intended for financial professionals and institutional investors only. This is not intended for use with the general public. The views expressed in this podcast represent those of the speaker and are subject to change. Nothing presented should be construed as a recommendation to purchase or sell any security or follow any investment technique or strategy, and does not constitute advice, advertisement, an invitation, a confirmation, an offer or solicitation to engage in any investment activity or an offer of any banking or financial service. Investing involves risk, including the possible loss of principal. All examples herein are for illustrative purposes only, and there can be no assurance that any particular investment objective will be realized, or any investment strategy seeking to achieve such objective will be successful. Past performance is not a reliable indication of future performance. Before acting on any information, consider the appropriateness of it with regard to your particular objectives, financial situation, and needs, and seek advice. No representation or warranty expressed or implied is made as to the accuracy or completeness of the information, opinions, and conclusions presented. In preparing this recording, reliance has been placed, without independent verification, on the accuracy and completeness of all information available from external sources. Macquarie Asset Management is the asset management division of Macquarie Group. Macquarie Asset Management is a full-service asset manager offering a diverse range of products across public and private markets, including fixed income, equities, multi-asset solutions, private credit, infrastructure, renewables, natural assets, real estate, and asset finance. The public investment business is a part of Macquarie Asset Management and includes investment products and advisory services distributed and offered by and referred through affiliates, which include Delaware Distributors, LP, a registered broker/dealer and member of the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, and Macquarie Investment Management Business Trust, a Securities and Exchange Commission registered investment advisor. Investment advisory services are provided by a series of MIMBT. Macquarie Group refers to Macquarie Group Limited and its subsidiaries and affiliates worldwide. Delaware Funds by Macquarie refers to certain investment solutions that Macquarie Asset Management Public Investment distributes, offers, refers, or advises. Other than the Macquarie Bank Limited, any Macquarie Group entity noted in this podcast is not an authorized deposit-taking institution for the purposes of the Banking Act 1959. The obligations of these other Macquarie Group entities do not represent deposits or other liabilities of Macquarie Bank. Macquarie Bank does not guarantee or otherwise provide assurance in respect of the obligations of these Macquarie Group entities. In addition, if this podcast relates to an investment, the investor is subject to investment risk, including possible delays in repayment and loss of income and principal invested, and none of the Macquarie Bank or any other Macquarie Group entity guarantees any particular rate of return on or the performance of the investment, nor do they guarantee repayment of capital in respect of the investment.